Ladies and gentlemen, happy Thursday. College football experts John Bryce, Zach Barnett. Join me. I'm Scott Roussel, Football Scoop Podcast. Doug Samuels is on special assignment, gallivanting through New York City, as one does this time of year. Gentlemen, it's Thursday. Games action has been action. It's been, you know, beautiful to see Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We got Clemson at Louisville, which is kind of okay. Yeah, it's a ball game. Minnesota's at the Ducks. Also, you know, you don't expect PJ to shock them, but maybe, you know, low game for Oregon. I'm going to start there. Let's start Friday. Clemson's out of Louisville. Quick thoughts, gentlemen.
Well, Clemson struggled none whatsoever last week with Florida State, which had been pointed to as a, you know, a very important contest for each of those teams' trajectories this year. Not really overly important on the national landscape, but very important for each team's respective direction and the heat around the coaching staffs of both. And Clemson just handled the Seminoles. And now you can trace a lot of Clemson's angst over the last year and a half to its performance last year against Louisville. So Clemson certainly would love nothing more than to return the favor by disrupting Louisville's still alive playoff hopes and Louisville's still alive ACC championship hopes this week.
Yeah, I think you have to have I'm counting on a bounce back performance from Louisville after losing at home to Cal. Their season, I mean, their season's in peril at this point. And home game, weeknight, tends to favor the home team in these weeknight games. I'm on Louisville because I think last week's Clemson Florida State outcome says more about Florida State than Clemson.
Okay. Jeff Brohm is in a beautiful seat with this coaching search stuff going on nationwide. And he's the type of guy, gritty competitor, ball player himself, quarterback, has done it in professional sports, back in college, has done it in multiple universities, back at his alma mater, and is really well-liked there. And they'd love to keep him. But there's some other programs who, if they don't get Lane Kiffin, Jeff's in the mix for a lot of jobs, a lot of eyes on this one. And you don't want to see Louisville lose again. Jeff doesn't, obviously.
Yeah.
All right, Ducks, go ahead.
I was just going to say, being able to be good with quarterbacks and having a knack for winning big games is two pretty good selling points for other programs.
Yeah, and there's only one Lane Kiffin in this cycle. So there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people that view them as Lane Kiffin 1 and Lane Kiffin 1A, with Brian Baum being Lane Kiffin 1A. And arguably, Brahm's got a little bit longer track record of working with quarterbacks and certainly doing more with less.
Yeah, Jeff doesn't get the national pub that maybe Drinkwitz does. But both of those guys, you know, you got Lane is kind of the upper echelon for a lot of programs, what they're thinking. You got Brohm and Drink right there. And both of those guys are pretty sassy when the mics, when the TV's in their face, the video's in their face. They got some pretty funny quips. So either one of them will do well. All right, Minnesota's going over to Oregon. Can Minnesota shock them?
I'm not sure Minnesota has – go ahead, Zach. Go ahead.
I was going to say Minnesota does not have the horsepower to run with Oregon, and if Minnesota is able to drag Oregon into a Big Ten West type game where the first of 20 wins, Oregon proved last week it's comfortable out Big Ten Westing you when it went to Iowa and did that. And Minnesota hasn't beaten a top 10 team on the road since the year 2000.
I think the Gophers defense keep them in this game for a while. I'm not sure that Minnesota has enough overall to pull it out unless Oregon is just still in such a slog from the fight and that it went through for 60 minutes against Iowa and the slog, the literal slog that it played in that game. So if Oregon sleepwalks early, that can feed the belief of Minnesota, but overall Oregon is the better team, and being at home, I think they will just sort of gradually pull away in what will not be a very pretty contest.
Give me some quick thoughts on a couple of games Saturday. early starts. JB, Notre Dame is at Pitt. I know Deuce was like, hey, this one in the big one, you know, we got conference games coming. Like, how we see this one playing out?
Yeah, and real quickly, last little nugget on the last game, Minnesota-Oregon. We should note, as we talk about coaches being involved in games this weekend that are being circled elsewhere. Scott, I know we've heard P.J. Fleck multiple times with UCLA. We've heard P.J. Fleck with Arkansas. P.J. Fleck has done a really strong job at Minnesota. He sort of had his little rant last month where he said, stop calling it gimmicky or whatever, like, we've won over 100 games, find a new word. And I think Minnesota has the longest bowl winning streak, I believe, of any program in the country right now. And they've certainly been very elite in the postseason under PJ Fleck. So he's won some ugly Big Ten games, and then he's won some bowl games too, and done some great things at Minnesota that quite literally hadn't been done there in decades. So that's all on that. Pittsburgh, Notre Dame comes down to how effectively Pittsburgh can bottle up Notre Dame's run game while also getting to quarterback C.J. Carr. We know that Pittsburgh plays one of the most aggressive pass defenses anywhere in college football. They run a lot of cover zero. They come at you. They get in your face. This is the best Notre Dame wide receiver core, by all accounts, since around 2018. The insertion of Malachi Fields, the Virginia transfer, has been huge. Will Pauling, the transfer from Maryland, and then Jordan Faison, the guy that they found off the lacrosse team and ended up using a football scholarship on, comprised the top three receivers for Notre Dame. So if Pittsburgh plays what we expect Pittsburgh to play, what it always plays, and is effective in bottling up Jeremiah Love, then if they can get to C.J. Carr very quickly, it will be a long, tough day for the Irish offense. That's the whole key. And I know from speaking with people, this Notre Dame offensive line is very solid. It's not an elite overall offensive line. They've already had to replace their starting center this summer. They've already had to replace their starting left guard, Billy Shrouth, who's a preseason All-American candidate. So there are some holes or some inexperience on this Notre Dame line that Pittsburgh is going to look to exploit. Flip side of that, Pittsburgh's young freshman quarterback, Mason Heinschel, he's just a dude. They really like him. The people in Pittsburgh compare him very favorably to Kenny Pickett, but indicate that he's further along than Kenny Pickett was as a true freshman, or really even his first couple of years.
JB, South Carolina is at A&M. Mike Furry's going to call the O for South Carolina. I think A&M is playing extremely well. South Carolina's not. Is there any chance A&M overlooks them? This is, you know, at Kyle Field. I like A&M significantly. Thoughts?
Yeah, this is one of the wider spreads of any SEC game this season. The Aggies favored by almost three touchdowns at around 19.5 points. Last I saw, I don't see really much hope for the Gamecocks. This has devolved into a lost season for South Carolina for a number of reasons. Some of them have been injuries. A lot of them have been offensive ineptitude, thus us breaking the story earlier this month on Mike Shula being out as offensive coordinator. That was an odd choice from the get-go and a bad fit, it proved, throughout. So South Carolina's got issues far bigger than this game. Texas A&M has no focus other than this game because it's handled business every single week this year, and it's going to end up, if it keeps winning, then the Aggies will be no worse than the number two seed in the college football playoff. There's literally not a scenario where they would be worse than the number two seed. That's a great position to be in. The Aggies will handle business. They'll handle business quite comfortably.
Wisconsin, you know, Luke Fickell got a stay from Chris McIntosh. They go out, they find a way to get a win over Washington. Can Wisconsin find a little magic and scare Indiana?
No. I mean, Washington played a lousy game, had no business losing that contest. I mean, credit for Wisconsin finding a way, and Wisconsin's defense answered the call again in not the most pleasant conditions in which to play. But Wisconsin won that game, I believe, without completing a pass by a quarterback in the first half. The guy who finished with the most passing yards for Wisconsin in that game was their punter, off of a fake punt, and that was all of 24 yards. No, I would look for, especially with Indiana's scare at Penn State last week, I would look for Indiana to win this game 45-10. Like, the Hoosiers are going to get another souvenir pelt, and they're going to hang a badger on the wall.
Love it. Michigan is at Northwestern. Northwestern didn't play great against USC. Michigan's got a little chip on their shoulder. They need to get right before Ohio State. What do you think?
I think – I don't know how much I believe in the term trap game, but I think this is an absolute fight for the Wolverines. They've hardly been offensive juggernauts this season. Bryce Underwood playing on the road. Bryce Underwood has shown that he's got some really unique skills, really unique talent overall. But he's also got some freshman issues that he just has to grow through and fight through. And those are oftentimes not really easy to do on the road. Northwestern, as poor as it looked over the course of the game last Friday night at USC, has generally played really good defense all year and hardly ever beaten itself. And I think this is a four-quarter game. And from talking to people in Ann Arbor, you know, there's a lot of unease about how important it is for them to close the season strong. And they go to Northwestern, to a fading Maryland team, and then they host, obviously, Ohio State. And Ohio State, as someone told me this week, Ryan Day will do everything in his power to throw 100 on Michigan this year if he can. So Michigan's got a low-key, sneaky, super-duper important three-game close. I can't stress that enough. Like, talking to people in the building, that they feel a lot of pressure to close the right way.
Yep.
For those wondering, we just might as well acknowledge it at this point. For those listening, not watching, Zach is doing the show today from his car, and he keeps popping in and out like one of PJ Fleck's Minnesota Golden Gophers. And we're not sure what's going on, but we apologize. You're having to hear so much from me.
And all the games that I was playing to ask Zach, it's like right when I'm there, and then Zach drops off. Anyways, Arkansas is coming to Baton Rouge. I'm going to go to the game. Bobby, LSU is really kind of a disjointed mess. Bobby, you know, needed to win a bunch of games, and he really hasn't. Now he's got LSU in a quandary. If Bobby wins this one, JB, does that do anything for Bobby's case there? Is that ship sailed?
I think that ship sailed. I think he had to almost win out, or he certainly had to take the Hogs to bowl eligibility when he took over for Pittman there after at the end of September. And it's just not going to work out that way for Arkansas. They've acquitted themselves relatively well overall, hardly ever been just completely outclassed since Petrino took over. But he had to win games. That's the name of the game. Otherwise, Sam Pittman had a bunch of close losses too, and that's why they got rid of him. But a win for Bobby Petrino certainly continues to make him an attractive candidate for another team next year, either potentially a Group of Five head coach or another Power Conference offensive coordinator.
Yeah. Oklahoma's at Alabama. Thoughts on that one?
Huge win. We know Alabama played an incredibly emotional game last week against LSU. Didn't look its best, but never truly felt threatened, in my opinion. Just sort of slogged its way to a 20-9 win. Oklahoma has the defense that reminds me of Missouri earlier this year when it hit Ty Simpson a lot, when it gave the Tide just a lot of trouble, and when Alabama's offense bogged down for a huge portion of that game. Presumably, Mateer is as healthy as he's been since before his injury. So I don't think that Alabama can afford to let Oklahoma linger, especially the way that Oklahoma came back and won at Tennessee a few weeks ago. I think that really re-energized Oklahoma's season for at least going into this weekend. It also saved Oklahoma's season and saved the potential viability of what Oklahoma can do down the stretch into the postseason. So for all of those reasons, I think this is one of the best games of the weekend.
Yeah, I totally agree. And Alabama, just thinking about how the rest of their season plays out, this, like, they can't lose this one. So at home game, I like Bama. JB, in NC State got a big win versus Georgia Tech. Now they're at Miami.
You know, CJ Daniels, the quarterback for NC State, was really sensational last week. I saw him in person earlier this year at Notre Dame and just was not that thoroughly impressed with him. He did some nice things, and you can see glimpses of it. The consistency has not been there. Things have been hairy at Miami. There's a lot of upset people with the way the Hurricanes have invested into this roster, both from the coaching staff all the way down. They're lurking at 15. They certainly have to win out and get some help to be a true playoff factor. But when people are telling us that the Miami president and AD have had meetings with Mario Cristobal to talk about the team and to talk about what's going wrong and what's not happening and why things are not there and where's the sense of urgency, I think that gives you an idea of how real the urgency is in South Florida. Miami just cannot fade and dissolve into oblivion here down the stretch, or it's a real condemnation for the future of Mario Cristobal's program.
Quick thoughts, JB. I was at USC. To me, that Iowa defense presents challenges for SC.
Oh, I think the Iowa defense will really wreak havoc with Jaden Maiava. And, you know, I saw this week that USC had to move a very heralded four-star safety signee to the offensive side of the ball as a backup running back. Their troops are depleted there. King Miller, the guy who's been playing incredibly well for them, is technically a walk-on. He arrived at USC as a walk-on and was their third-string tailback for the first 4 to 5 weeks of the season until injuries forced him into the starting role about a week before they played Notre Dame. And he ran wild on Michigan in his first start. He's been very consistent, but he's just one man. And that Iowa defense hits as hard as any defense in the country. Xavier Nwankwo is an incredible safety for the Hawkeyes. And then Tim Lester has he's not just taken the Iowa record books and set them on fire on offense, but he's done a really nice job in year two. He's brought Mark Gronowski along. He did a lot of really good things. I loved the quarterback draw on fourth and goal last week that should have been the game winner for the Hawkeyes, that should have kept this game, meaning it was a playoff eliminator for either team. Hawkeyes have been eliminated from the playoffs. USC is trying to get to its game against Oregon upcoming with the playoffs still in mind.
Let me change the subject a little bit. Utah goes to Baylor. That game takes on, in my mind, a little bit more significance with the whole Paul of Mac Rhodes and what's going on there. You know, Mac Rhodes taking a leave of absence amid a new investigation, not really related to the stuff in September, the player, an altercation he had with the player. And now if Utah comes in there and wrecks shop, man, I think Baylor might say, let's flush things and start from scratch. But maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. Is Utah going to come in there? Are they going to come in there and wreck Waco?
I do. I think so. I think they're favored by just a little more than a touchdown. Baylor is not a bad 5-4 team, but Baylor is an incredibly inconsistent 5-4 team, which I guess is how you get to 5-4. They've hardly been outclassed this season by anyone other than Auburn handled them before everything went off the rails for the Tigers in the opening game. And then Cincinnati certainly handled them. Otherwise, they've really been in every other contest. But Utah, again, one of those two-loss teams lurking around number 13 in the CFP rankings, a lot to play for. The Big 12 certainly jonesing to get two teams into the 12-team field this year. That's a big element. So I would watch Utah to handle business in this one. That would give Baylor a fifth loss, and still with a road game at Arizona, which is now bowl eligible, and a home game against Houston, which has played pretty well except for that West Virginia game that's so inexplicable. So, I mean, Baylor, after Dave Aranda winning 8 games last year and saving his job, if he loses, you know, 7 or 8 games this year, I don't think he's back next year. And then Mac Rhodes, that whole bizarre situation now twice with different investigations and different sets of embarrassment casts a huge pall on his future at the program.
Yeah, agreed. All right, a huge SEC matchup. Texas is at Georgia. I don't know that I would say, well, Georgia's not playing their best. Well, I don't know. JB, how's this game play out?
Georgia had not been playing its best until last week and had delivered its first complete performance of the year, and poor Mississippi State happened to be the recipient of it. And Mississippi State had put so much into that game and had emphasized so much its chances to win that game and make a statement and showcase.
And JB froze right at the perfect time. Yeah, Georgia hanging 41 on State. That was okay. JB, you're back. Texas, yes. Georgia. I lost you midstream. Give me how you see it playing out. If you're watching this, when it freezes on JB, he just makes the best faces. Ooh, we might cut this part up and share it on social. Just letting you know.
You got me? You got me?
Yeah, I got you.
It's that day.
It's been a stream, folks. It's been a stream.
Texas, Georgia. Georgia is finally playing its most complete ball of the year. This is an eliminator contest. I mean, the loser is on the outside of the playoffs. Well, Georgia can lose.
Yeah, Georgia not. Yeah.
Yeah, but Georgia then faces a playoff eliminator to close the season against Georgia Tech if it loses this game. Instead, I think this is the playoff eliminator for Texas. I think this pushes preseason number one Texas further on its way to a four-loss regular season. And while they will not have lost to Kentucky or Mississippi State, Zach Barnett will have been correct in predicting that Texas did not return to the playoffs.
Alternatively, if they find a way, play out of their minds, get a great win, it really sets them up for quite a battle with A&M. You know, they got Arkansas, but then they go A&M. Like, the whole state of Texas, the country is watching that. That could be epic. So I think a lot of folks are cheering for Texas in this one, just to see Ham in the SEC.
Oh, the potential for chaos. A Texas win makes the final 2 weeks of the regular season absolute pandemonium and magic.
And Ham. I love it all. Pandemonium, magic, and Ham. There we are, folks. All right, finishing the night out. We got TCU at BYU, Boise State at San Diego State. What do you like there, JB?
BYU, again, one of those teams for the Big 12 trying to become that second playoff team. They've got to keep taking care of business. They're 8-1. They played really terribly at Texas Tech last week, bounce back game. The physicality of BYU, I think, is the difference in this game. TCU has proved more often than not it can score a lot of points, but I just think that over the course of this game, a late night, probably cold game there in Provo at Lavelle Edwards Stadium, I like BYU and the toughness of quarterback Bear Bachmeier to lead them to victory.
Yeah, I feel the same way. How about Boise at San Diego State? San Diego State, you've been telling us since before the season you liked them on the over. Boise's had a tough season. San Diego State got this one?
Boise really has had a tough season. Look, I don't think that league is so competitive. It's fun to follow, watch a lot of their late night games on Saturdays when winding down and finishing some work and just seeing. And there's some really nice ball being played out there. I don't think you can just automatically sharpie in a dub for the Techs, but I do think that San Diego State's defense and then the quarterback, Donegal, the Michigan transfer, should be enough. And I know firsthand from talking with that staff this week how pissed off San Diego State is for the way it played at Hawaii last week, which, shout out Rainbow Warriors. They're an 8-win team. They're doing phenomenal things there under their favorite son. So kudos to Hawaii for really just seizing the opportunity at hand against a red-hot San Diego State team. And Ryan, one thing to quickly note, and we talked about this yesterday, you and I, Scott, Sean Lewis, don't rule him out at UCLA. I believe they've had some conversations. Certainly this is a game you beat a Boise State with what it's done this entire century, really, but being a playoff team last year, That would only further bolster Sean Lewis's potential candidacy at UCLA, where Bob Chesney is another key name that's emerged.
Yeah. Good stuff, JB. Zach, we appreciate your chiming in on this podcast. You did a great job. JB, any closing thoughts? The floor is yours, my friend.
You know, closing thoughts is relish every freaking weekend, relish all the games, because somehow, unbelievably, this is our Football Scoop Week 14 preview podcast. You heard me correctly. Week 14. Where has it all gone? It's a little upsetting that it is almost all gone. And then don't sleep on the ends of the regular seasons for the NCAA Division II and Division III teams this weekend. A lot of great games going on there, and we're coming near the end of the regular season in the FCS ranks. A couple of coaches there to shout out. Certainly Steve Englehart, what he's done this season at Presbyterian, flat out phenomenal. Mike Willis at Mercer at Marist has won four games. That program has only won more than four games once in the last 15 years. Billy Koch in his first season and a half at Stony Brook has won 13 games. They won 13 games combined in their previous 60 games. So those three guys really done some great things. Mike Jacobs had an odd start to the season, but his Mercer quarterback is electric. Mike Jacobs, a fabulous ball coach. Mercer in a commanding position to win the SoCon yet again. And then South Dakota State just trying to stabilize and find its footing after losing its quarterback to injury. They lost to Indiana State. Unbelievable upset for the Sycamores. So South Dakota State, watch them. They're trying to find themselves. They need to continue to stabilize before the playoffs start.
JB, does Mercer beat Auburn?
I have said that Mercer could beat Auburn, and I have said that Tennessee Tech could sneak up on Kentucky here coming up, because that's another guy, Bobby Wilder, what he's done with Tennessee Tech. The Golden Eagles remain undefeated, just a fabulous run. I think UAB has vetted Bobby Wilder among its candidates. So Mercer's quarterback, as it was put to me, Mercer's quarterback probably plays in the SEC next year. So why not announce his arrival with a win against Auburn?
Love it. Folks, you heard it here first. College Football Podcast, the Football Scoop. Love you guys. Everybody have a great weekend. We'll enjoy the games, and we'll be back here Sunday morning to recap.